Welcome to the Michelle Mission, Two Men, One Podcast, Every Black Film Ever Made. My name is Vincent Williams, and I'm joined as always by my partner.
Hey, holla at your boy, this is Len, aka the Bat Tribble.
And here on the third week of Boo-tober.
This is the second week.
Is it the second week?
Only the second week.
It is only the second week. Here on the second week of Boo-tober.
Just can't wait to get rid of these scary movies, huh, Vince?
I guess we'll talk about that.
Okay.
We're going to spend our time with another vampire film this evening as the vampires deal with perhaps their greatest enemy. Not Van Helsing. No. Nor Blade.
No.
We are, of course, talking about the Bronx as we discuss 2020's Vampires versus the Bronx, directed by Osmani Rodriguez, the choice of Lynn Webb. But before we deal with garlic and bodegas and crosses in Timberlands.
Maybe the single best scene of the movie. Shout out to each and every one of you out there who are watching as we stream live from Yunk Junk, Philadelphia's premier video podcast palace here in the Manayunk section of the city. And we're streaming live to Facebook as well as to YouTube. And shout out to each and every one of the missionaries out there in the chat watching us live. Hello, one and all.
Good evening. Good evening.
Vincent, how are you doing, my friend?
Chilling. Having a good day. I told you yesterday was my wedding anniversary, so I'm feeling good about that.
So how many years are we talking now?
24.
24
years. My marriage is almost old enough to rent a car.
How about that,
man? Yeah, so.
Wow, that's beautiful. Congratulations. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Wendy. Thank you, so.
That's dope.
Feeling
man.
Good?
Yeah.
Feeling fine?
Mm-hmm. That's cool. Are you doing anything special? Or?
We are going to hang out this weekend in the city. You know, yesterday we went and just got some quick dinner.
Okay.
Just to commemorate.
Right.
Yeah.
But this weekend is when you're really going to celebrate. And you said you're going to hang out in the city.
Hang out in the city. You have to treat your city like a tourist sometimes.
Okay.
So.
Have you earmarked any particular places you're going to go, or are you just going to play it by ear?
Play it by ear. Let the city speak to us.
That's dope, man. Mm-hmm. Well, congratulations to you and Wendy.
Thank you, sir.
That is cool. And
yourself?
This weekend, I took some time and I went to New York.
Nice.
Went to New York.
City's so nice, they named it twice.
I know. Didn't they? I had a good time there, just kind of hanging out, you know, around the Javits Center for a little bit, which was kind of fun because it was the week before the New York Comic Con. So they were putting up all of the banners, and that is a job and a half, man.
Look, man.
And it was also interesting because there were some people that were coming down to the Javits Center already in cosplay. Because they were doing photo shoots in preparation to promote the New York Comic Con that's going to be coming up next week.
Now, are you going
to Comic Con?
Yeah.
After 10 years as a Black Tribble and us going pretty much every year, I'm kind of Comic Con.
You conned out?
Yeah, I'm conned out.
I can never get tickets.
To the New York Comic Con?
Yeah.
Well, New York Comic Con, to be fair, next to the big one in San Diego, is the biggest one.
Yeah.
And it goes crazy.
Yeah, it does.
It goes crazy. And you are walking like this with people.
Yeah.
It's fun to take in a couple of times, but after that, it can become a little.
Sure. I know me and we're not going to spend a whole lot of time on this, y'all, but I know you and I have this in common that we do like the smaller conventions because I know this is crazy. But they have comics there.
Yeah. And you had the time and the space to kind of go through and look in the comics. Which of the big conventions, the best one to go to actually have space, have time to enjoy the whole thing is probably, to be fair, your hometown. Baltimore Comic Con.
It is the hidden gem of comic conventions, so much so that I actually don't even like talking about it like this.
You don't even want to put it out there?
Right. Because it really, I 100% agree with you. Yeah. That is the perfect big convention now. And it's the only one left like that.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Pretty much. So very true.
But that's good to hear.
Yeah. So we had a good weekend. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that I noticed just perusing through the news, and mm-hmm. I actually sent mm-hmm. this story over to you.
Yes.
You know, we are both huge fans of
The Harder They Fall.
The Harder They Fall.
And Lakeith Stanfield.
And Lakeith Stanfield. Well, thank you, Vincent.
And Jamie Samuels.
And Jamie Samuels. Yeah. And there was a story in the Hollywood Reporter about Jamie Samuels' next project, mm-hmm. which yes. he will be doing with Lakeith Stanfield, The Book of Clarence.
Yes.
Which is going to be his all black biblical epic.
Yes.
You know, him, he was a fan of Westerns, which what made him do The Harder They Fall.
Mm-hmm.
And wanting to depict the, you know, the these real life cowboys of the time in this, you know, fictional Western setting. But Jamie Samuels is also just a movie fan.
Right.
And he's a fan particularly of biblical epics,
mm-hmm.
which is actually kind of cool. The reason why this stood out to me is because I recently went on a deep dive.
Nice.
And watched a whole bunch of biblical epics.
Nice.
Back to back.
Nice.
You know, watched Ben-Hur.
Of course.
Cleopatra.
Of course.
I watched, what else was there? A couple of, like, Roman movies.
Okay.
That were about, like, Julius
Caesar.
So you didn't
do, like, the Ten Commandments?
I didn't go Ten Commandments.
Okay.
Only because I've seen the Ten Commandments so many times.
Sure,
I used to be like a yearly watch. But now he's got this, Jamie Samuels has this project, the Book of Clarence.
Yeah.
Which it stars Lakeith Stanfield, set in and around the time of Jesus Christ.
Right.
Where Lakeith Stanfield as kind of like this, like what a street hustler would look like back in biblical times.
Right.
Like, gets the idea of seeing Jesus Christ walk around and like everybody, like, you know, showing praise to him. Hey, I can get on this praise thing.
It's probably a good hustle.
So now he starts reporting like, no, I'm the Messiah.
Yes.
And all of a sudden people are like, I'm like, yo, that is so boss of an idea.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thought. Sounds a little bit like Life of Brian.
A little bit.
You know, like that's sort of this thing going on right on the side of what's happening with Jesus.
Right, yeah. Right. Across the street.
Yeah.
Across the street from Jesus.
But yeah, looking forward to this a lot.
I really am. It's funny. I've always had in the back of my mind, it only had the title.
Mm-hmm.
But because I was a fan of these type of movies and also kind of a fan of, like, you know, those sword and sandal movies, like mm-hmm. Gladiator mm-hmm. and stuff like
Spartacus.
That. Spartacus. Mm-hmm. Which kind of like walks both lines.
Yes.
Like biblical and
yeah.
the sword and sandal thing. I've always had an idea for like a big bombastic black version
mm-hmm.
of that type of story. Right. And the title I have, and I'm copyrighting it right here on the Michelle Mission, so you can't take this, ladies and gentlemen.
Okay.
The title that I have
mm-hmm.
is called A Moor's Son.
Okay. All right.
But it's all about when the Moors, you know, sack Italy.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, focusing on like maybe like a small family or one guy or mm-hmm. something like that. But I just think it's a story rife for exploration
mm-hmm.
In a film or a series in sure. some way.
Sure. I like it.
Like it?
I like it.
All right.
But now you everyone has seen the idea, so we know where it came from.
Yes.
All right.
Yes. So
all right.
Can't have it. So I'm looking forward to the book.
Yeah, me too.
The Book of Clarence with Lakeith Stanfield, who mm-hmm. is just phenomenal talent.
Yeah. Did you watch A Changeling?
I did not.
Okay. It's on my list. It's on my list a little bit. Yeah. I'm like you. Keith Stanfield actually just gets me in the door.
He does. He does. I can't say I've liked everything he did only because he was in Disney's A Haunted Mansion, which is not a good movie.
Oh, it's not?
No.
I was hoping it'd be a hidden gem. It's not?
No.
Oh, that's too bad. No.
It's not a hidden gem at all.
Oh, I'm glad everybody got some Disney money, though.
That's that, and you, man.
Because Dear White People directed it, didn't he?
Yes.
Justin
Simmons.
Yeah, Justin Simeon.
He directed it. Rosario Dawson's in it.
Oh yeah, get that Disney money.
Tiffany Haddish.
Oh yeah, get that Disney money.
Yeah. And Lakeith, I think he filmed Haunted Mansion in between The Harder They Fall and The Book of Clarence.
Right.
Because he looks tired.
He looks tired.
So he looks like he just cashed a check.
Right. Hey, you know that check's going clear.
And I ain't mad at him. Mm-hmm. So God bless him. So I'm looking forward to him getting back to work.
Okay.
In The Book of Clarence.
Excellent.
All right. All right, Vincent. All right. We've got emails.
All right.
Which means that we have missives from the missionaries.
Missives from the missionaries.
What's going on, Lynn?
We have emails, Vincent.
Ooh, missives from the missionaries.
Missives from the missionaries, ladies and gentlemen, here in the month of Boo-tober. I saw a post on social media. They like when I say that.
Okay, there you go. Hey, got to give the people.
Give the people what they want.
Mm-hmm.
In Boo-tober.
In Boo-tober.
So anyway, we got an email from Corey Nicole.
Hey, what's up, Corey?
Hi, Len and Vincent. My name is Nicole, and I just want to start by saying thank you for all you do. I am a young listener.
Okay.
And one of my favorite interests or hobbies are film and watching movies, specifically black ones.
Okay.
I've been listening to you guys for quite some time now, and it is refreshing to find a podcast that discusses literally every black film ever made. Black films that rarely get talked about or fly under people's radar. I listened to the Bones episode, and you guys uttered the same sentiments I had about the film. Even Pam Grier couldn't even save the movie. And it's very, very true. Very true. But I tell people, I still recommend people see Bones because it still has the single most disgusting scene I've ever seen put the film. When this dog vomits maggots all into this guy's face. And I'm quivering thinking
that. I'd forgotten all about it. That stayed with you, though.
Oh.
Which is a sign. I mean, that's a testament to the film.
Because it gets in dude's mouth.
Yeah, that gets in your mouth.
She has a question.
Okay.
A question I have for you both to answer is, where do you rank Death by Temptation?
Okay.
When it comes to black horror films? Since it's the month of October, it's Boo-tober.
That's what I hear.
It's officially spooky season,
mm-hmm.
And I felt it would be appropriate to ask, where would you both rank it in the black horror genre?
Hmm.
All in all, keep up the good work. I always look forward to the new episodes. P.S. I love the Class of 1989 series as well. What a year. Thank you, Nicole.
Oh, thank you, Nicole.
So Death by Temptation.
Yeah. How do you feel about Death by Temptation?
Mm.
I know I'm pretty sure I liked it more than you, but.
Yes.
Yeah, but yes. Go ahead.
Because that's the anthology.
No.
Which one is
Death by Temptation? Death by Temptation is the one with James.
Tales from the Hood.
You're right, with James Bond III. And appropriately enough, remember the black female vampire? Remember James Bond III is trying to be a preacher, and mm-hmm. he gets seduced.
Yeah.
And Bill Nunn's in it.
Oof.
Yeah.
Oof. Yeah, that's going to rank pretty low, Nicole, with me
mm-hmm.
on the black horror sphere. It's not the worst.
No.
Don't get me wrong. But it's going to rank pretty low. It's not going to... I don't hold it in with any high acclaim.
Yeah. I'm going to say what I'm almost positive I said when we reviewed it. It's not that good. The execution is not that good, but it sounds like this is damning with faint praise, but it really isn't. I do think it's interesting as a snapshot of that moment, because if you remember, the the subtext of vampirism as AIDS was barely subtext.
Right.
Which really was something from that moment. And, you know, like we talked about, what was it like? I think the cat people, the Anne Rice stuff. Like there were a couple, there were more than a few of the vampire things that came out in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Where clearly they were talking about AIDS.
Okay.
And the thing about Death by Temptation is, I believe it was the only black film or black text
to kind of make that
kind of dealt with it.
Yeah, yeah, I would say that.
Yeah, it was also weird because I mentioned Bill Nunn, but it was like Bill Nunn, Kadeem Hardison, James Bond III. I feel like there was at least one more person where it was like half of the cast of School Days was in it. So it was like really bizarre to see like the people in School Days in this film that wasn't that good. And then had this weird AIDS subtext. And remember, it was like kind of, it was like really moralistic. So it's like just really a strange film.
Very strange film. It stars James Bond III, like you said, Kadeem Hardison, Bill Nunn. Also, Cynthia Bond was in there. The ever-present Samuel Jackson.
There it is. There, that's four. That's four from School Days. Can I get a fifth?
From School Days, let's see.
That's it?
Yeah, I think
that's the four.
That's it. It also starred, remember, your man, John Canada Terrell.
John Canada Terrell is in there. He sure is.
And Guy Davis, who would then go on to... No, I think this was after.
After Beat Street?
Is he in Beat Street? Guy Davis?
Guy Davis Ozzie Davis' son?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's him in Beat Street.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Okay. You like all the other biters. You take a bite and you lead a rest. He's not as good of an actor as his father.
No, you don't think so? Yeah, that was him in Beat Street. Yeah, Death by Temptation doesn't hold up.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, Nicole. But
it's neat we got to talk about it though, because it's a weird movie.
It's a weird movie.
Yeah,
but
you know, I always take a weird movie over a boring movie.
We got another email, Vincent, from Michael Sykes.
Hey, what's up, Michael?
Joanna Man.
You talking about her. Go ahead. movie makes me so mad. The movie made me so mad.
Hey, Len and Vincent, I just heard y'all podcast episode on Joanna Man. It's not the best movie, but I would argue and say that it is fair. I remember going to the movies and seeing this, just like Len. There were some scenes that made me laugh out loud now and then, thanks to Tommy Davidson and the great underrated actor Miguel Nunez.
Mm.
It's better than Monkey Hustle and Malibu Most Wanted. Is Joanna Man better than Monkey Hustle?
Vincent? I don't think it's better than Monkey Hustle.
I know.
I think there's way more chaotic energy in the Monkey Hustle.
He asked a question. Why was Genuine even in this movie?
I have no idea.
He felt off, had no chemistry. Tommy Davidson is a great underrated comedic actor who doesn't get a lot of praise.
Mm-hmm.
I know y'all reviewing Halloween movies in October. Oh, no. That's October.
That's what I hear. Branding is everything.
But when are y'all going to review South Central, starring Glenn Plummer?
Yeah.
The Players Club.
Oh, yeah.
Or Across 110th Street.
Across 110th Street. There's some something, 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 something.
That's all he has.
Oh, that's all. Oh, no, that's the end of the letter.
That's literally the end. It doesn't even say bye. It's just done.
So he said, South Central, I really liked.
I love South Central.
I might get my Gen X black man card taken. I never really liked Players Club that much.
I've never seen Players Club.
Oh, you're even worse than me.
Yeah, I've never seen it.
Yeah.
I've seen scenes.
Yeah.
Never seen the whole movie.
Yeah.
So I'm you know, I know we will get to it.
Yeah.
In time.
And I have to say, it because I'm in an abusive relationship with my partner, I actually don't pick 1970s movies as much as I want to. Because of all of the disrespect and negative energy that I get every time I pick something from the 1970s.
No, you don't.
So you're talking about Across 110th Street. It's a lot of stuff from the 70s I haven't chosen.
I'm fine with you choosing.
See, movies here we go. Here you go.
70s.
Go ahead.
Is it?
Go ahead.
It's your wheelhouse.
Go ahead, Lynn.
It's your brand.
Go ahead.
It's fine.
Go ahead.
Pick it.
But y'all don't know when the camera goes off.
Oh, let's not start talking about when the camera goes off and all these F-bombs just come flying out of your pockets.
Across 110th Street is on my list.
There you go.
Yeah.
So put it on the table.
Put it on the table. All right.
Excuse me while I whip this out.
While I whip it. And now we're back to the Players Club.
So, but you know what? Look, to be fair to Michael, there are a ton of movies that the missionaries have suggested that we review and we haven't gotten to them
we
yet.
We haven't.
You know, the beautiful thing about this mission is we're going to review them all.
We're going to it's right there in the log line.
So eventually we'll get to the one that you like, ladies.
Yes.
And now that we've got more months that have themes, we'll probably be more inclined to get to some of these movies. Because I think it's the themes that make people start thinking about movies.
Sure, sure.
You know, like, oh, well, do this horror movie. Or
right, right, right.
Do this sci-fi movie.
Right, right, right. Because it's amazing on my list of Halloween Boo-tober entries. Like
Boo-tober.
Like somehow Leprechaun in the Hood has been moving up the list steadily. I'm like, boy.
You just wanted to drop that out here.
I'm just saying.
Do not want to watch Leprechaun in the Hood.
Look. So you got like Blackenstein we haven't done for the show.
Wow. Okay.
I don't think we did Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Black for the show.
Yes, we did.
Okay, so that's not on the list. We talked about Talk to Me.
But we haven't done it yet.
Right. Right. So those are two. What else?
What, horror?
Off the top of your head, if you had to do three more horror movies,
okay,
name three besides the two I just named.
And the ones that are the other two for the rest of the month.
Right, right, right. Leprechaun in the Hood. So like, what else would you name?
Well, I would name Event Horizon, even though I know you think that maybe is more high sci-fi.
But I'll take it.
But it's got a horror.
And we definitely have more sci-fi entries than horror. So
right. So I was
That's actually a good pull.
Event Horizon.
Okay.
Black horror films.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're going to do the first one next week.
I was about to say, you can do the sequel to Boo.
We can do Boo 2.
So you can do Boo 2, The Boo-ring. But I think already, the fact that you've already gone to Tyler Perry for your second choice, now you've realized the problem we have. I've been thinking about this for a couple of years.
Well, no, there's actually a couple of movies because I'm just drawing a blank on it. Regina Hall had the movie just from last year that takes place in
the school.
Okay,
right, right. Okay.
So that's a good one. The other black girl, I think, has some
like series.
I thought, oh, you're right. Then it's a series.
Yeah,
it's a series.
That Regina Hall one's a good pull.
Yeah. I'm sure there's more than a few. I'm sure there's something on Tubi that we could review.
Look. Now you are in real time realizing what I realized like 2 years ago. It's a fairly small list.
It is. You're right.
So, Leprechaun in the Hood.
It has a chance.
Yeah.
Next year. Not this year, though.
Not this year. It's all plugged in for this year. But thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Michael, for your email. And thank each and every one of you, ladies and gentlemen, that sends us email. You can always send your thoughts to the Michaud Mission at gmail.com. That's MICHEAUXMISSION at gmail.com. Tell us what is on your mind.
Top five. Who's your top five?
Tonight,
my top five is
the top five. Is a return to last week, Vincent?
Oh yeah,
because I have found. Go ahead. I have found more black vampires hiding in plain sight.
All right. What we got?
And we're going to start with number five.
Number five,
and for you watching on YouTube and at home, you'll actually be able to see as we can compare how these people looked in the almost 20 years apart.
Okay.
In all of these images. And number five, we have Lenny Kravitz.
Lenny Kravitz.
The singer, actor.
Mm-hmm.
Who?
Interior designer.
Is he an interior
designer? Yeah, I think he has interior design business.
I believe it.
Because Lenny Kravitz at this point is just doing side quests.
Well, yeah, I can definitely dig it.
Yeah.
Lenny Kravitz, who I defy you to find a line, a wrinkle on this man.
Yo, no doubt. Yeah. But, you know, again, I'm going to say a version of what I said last week. Lenny Kravitz at 50 something looks better than Lenny Kravitz looked at 20 something.
Well, okay, but I think he looks exactly the same.
Yeah, I hated Romeo Blue.
Romeo Blue?
Oh. See, you about to trigger.
I didn't know you Lenny about, Travis was a trigger for you.
You about to trigger 17-year-old Vince.
Oh.
You remember when Lisa Bonet got married?
Oh, yes, she got married to Lenny Kravitz.
No, she got married to Romeo Blue. Because remember, that was his stage name.
I never knew that.
Oh my God. Oh, I hate. We almost.
I never knew that. I always thought I always knew him as Lenny Kravitz.
I hated that.
Why?
Because he was married to Lisa Bonet, and I didn't like it.
Okay.
I didn't like him married to Lisa Bonet, and I did not like Lenny Kravitz until he cheated on Lisa Bonet, and then he was trying to get Lisa Bonet back. And then he did It Ain't Over Till It's Over. I said, that Lenny Kravitz is doing work right there.
Yeah.
He said, I got to put these guitars down. I got to put these guitars down. Lenny Kravitz went and got some violins. He got some violin. Tears I cry. Come dream the lie. Baby, it ain't over till it's over, over, over. I said, Lenny Kravitz is doing it right now. Get your woman, black man. But then he didn't. But then I was still with him. I loved that he went. I know, I'm complicated.
That's complicated.
I know, I'm complicated. I didn't like him. I ain't like Romeo Blue. And then his hair was all stupid. But when he did It Ain't Over Till It's Over.
But you didn't like him because he took Lisa Bonet from you.
I didn't like him because he was married to Lisa Bonet. But when he messed up and then tried to fix it, that's actually one of my favorite types of rhetoric. Black man who is messed up but then tries to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those are my favorite songs.
Okay. That makes absolutely
sense. I miss you and used to be my girl, and oh, I loved them songs.
Okay.
And Lenny Kravitz was right in there. Like I said, as soon as I heard them violins, I said, oh, he doing it right now. But yes, Lenny Kravitz. And now I love Lenny Kravitz.
Well, he's a vampire.
He is. Clean living.
I don't know about that.
I mean, look, man.
Blood.
or blood. Okay.
Blood. That's why his hair looks stupid.
No, his hair looks good now.
Well, yes, he's cut it.
Stupid then.
He's cut it now.
Good jeans. Roxy Roker was bad as she wanted to be.
She was a vampire too.
There you go. Well, there you go. Maybe that's how it passes on.
Number four. Black Vampire in the Mist.
Mm-hmm.
The model, Iman.
That's a good one.
Now, I'll give you, Iman is a woman that looks better now.
Yeah.
Than she did then, and she was fine.
Yeah.
Has never not been fine, and has never had plastic surgery.
Yeah, she's actually a little scary. Like, this is actually a really good vampire.
That's a vampire,
because
though.
If you, some situations, Iman was like, yeah, I should have saw this coming.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, because I don't believe me, but I'm telling you. If you go to Egypt and you look in the hieroglyphics, Iman is on the hieroglyphics.
Yeah. I'm a little uncomfortable talking about this.
I'm telling you, dog, like, she dated Tut.
Yeah, let's not stumble into something.
We've already have. I just don't want to, like, put it loud on the radar. That's the only reason why she ain't number one.
Yeah.
But she...
That's a good one.
Look, man.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Look, man.
All right, moving on.
Trust me. And David Bowen ain't dead.
Okay. Go ahead.
He's not. She got him, like, you know, somewhere. Anyway.
You're talking about people I gave dab. Like, I always gave David Bowen. Like, how do you step to Iman? Hello, Iman. I'm David Bowie.
Do you think he stepped to her? Do you think she probably said, come here?
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
Guess I could have went either way.
She said, come here. She been here forever.
Yeah, yeah.
She been here forever, man. She's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. All right, go ahead. Because I don't like talking about him.
All right, number three. This person, of all of them, is a vampire and looks like a vampire.
Okay.
Pharrell Williams.
Pharrell Williams. He's a goat, yeah.
He looks like a vampire.
Yeah.
I mean, the hairless thing does help him get it over.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, if you squint at that brother.
Yeah.
He looks like he stepped off the set of Blade 3.
Yeah, yeah, that's another good one.
He's a straight up vampire, man. That's another good one,
yeah. And, yeah.
And he's, you know, he's sucking blood. He's sucking people's music royalties. Like, he's...
Very nice.
He killed Robin Thicke's career.
Look.
So I'm telling you.
Look.
All right. Number two. Black vampire hiding in the mist.
Yes.
On the low. And this is your girl. Gabrielle Union.
Yeah. That's real talk.
Gabrielle Union.
That is real talk.
Could still play the cheerleader.
Well, you know.
From what? You Got Served, isn't that it?
Bring It On. You know, that's my favorite Gabrielle Union flex.
I know.
Like, on Halloween a couple of years ago, mm-hmm. she actually put on the Clover uniform.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. She fine as she won't be. Yes.
Yes. That's what happens when you've been day walking. Since you were born.
Yeah.
That's the other thing about she's a daywalker.
Yeah.
And now she done turned Dwayne Wade.
Look, man.
Have you ever look at Dwayne Wade really now? Like, he looked like he just like one of them followers, man.
Believe it or not, I think he got like a crest on the back. Dwayne Wade.
Because you don't follow sports.
Right.
But if you follow sports, you could see how this man's career has gone.
Does he still play?
No, he's retired.
What you looking out for?
Because he shows up every place.
With her?
No, he's got like he hosts game shows now.
He hosts game shows now?
Yeah, and he talks about basketball. Like, he's one of the broadcaster dudes.
When the broadcast?
When she allows him out.
When she allows him out.
Because he can't walk in the sun. Only she can walk in the sun. She's the daywalker.
The daywalker. That's fair.
All right. And now.
The number one. Yes.
Because this one. Is the one that turned all these vampires.
Okay. Is it Nia Long again?
No, she's a succubus.
Right. Oh, yeah, that's right. Oh, yeah, keep moving.
But this is the one that you gave me.
Okay.
And I went and got receipts, and you're right.
Okay. Who you talking about?
Blair Underwood.
Look, man, look.
Blair Underwood.
Look, it's not a game.
It is not a game. Because here's the thing. Blair Underwood was King Tut.
Yeah. Yeah.
What? What?
Like, you hear people say Blair Underwood was on L.A. Law, and you're like, L.A. Law? How long ago was L.A. Law on? And it's like, exactly.
Right. But it wasn't that he was on L.A. Law. He wrote law in L.A.
He wrote law in
back
L.A.
in the, like, 1700s.
Back in the 1700s. Yeah. It was like, his name was, like, Blairington Underwoodington. And he had, like, lamb chops. He was a free Negro. A free Negro barrister. My dear sir. He had, like, a Frederick Douglass do. And, like, the lamb chops. As a free Negro of the territories. And he was, like, writing law.
Mm-hmm.
Did you watch the Bass Reeves trailer?
No, I haven't.
It looks good.
Who's, is it David Oyelowo?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It looks good. Because, you know, the Yellowstone dude made it. And, you know, that's sort of,
that's what's.
Right, right. And Yellowstone is like the equivalent of Dad Rock. So, like, but the trailer looked good.
Okay, well.
Yeah, like.
You judge things by the trailer.
Look, and you're right, but yeah, the trailer.
Looks good.
Had me way more interested than I planned on being. Okay. So.
Is it not going to be like a.
It's going to be on, like, Paramount Plus.
Paramount Plus. Plus,
yeah.
Yeah. Well.
But Blair Underwood as Undead Vampire King.
Is king, the king. Exactly.
Yeah,
the
absolutely.
King. The king.
Absolutely.
Blair Underwood.
Blair Underwood. Well, there you go.
There you go. That is more black vampires.
Now, let's stop
hiding and
talking about these vampires in case some of this is true. And then we.
There's no. Did you look at Blair Underwood? Like, everybody else's picture was from, like, 2000
mm-hmm.
to 2020.
Mm-hmm.
Blair Underwood was from 1985.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
1985.
The dude played a lawyer on L.A. Law, like, 40 years ago. All right. All right. All right.
Now it's time to move on to the Game of Kings.
Yes. Tuts. And pharaohs and Tutuses and pharaohs, Lady Tuts.
Lady Tuts.
Did we talk about King Tut? Were me and you talking about King Tut on Batman 66? Did we talk about King Tut?
We did not.
Yeah, I was
that
saying.
That was played by Victor Brown.
Right, right. I was saying King Tut is the only one that made me think maybe he, because remember, King Tut always had ladies.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he had lady henchmen.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that King Tut, whoa, slow down, Batman. What's King Tut got to say? Because, like, King Tut had a whole deal. He had ladies.
He did have ladies.
Like, the rest of them just had, like, goons.
Yes. And one lady. Sometimes they'd have one lady.
Right, right. But it was, like, his lady. But, like, King Tut had ladies.
It was nothing plural. But ladies.
Like, whatever with King Tut was laying down, people were picking it up. Why are we talking about King Tut?
You went on this track. I let you go.
Go ahead.
It was your turn.
Right, right. Time for the Kings. Yes.
That's the key.
So, all right, keeping it in theme.
All right, thematic.
We talked about black vampires.
Yes.
These are other vampires hiding in our midst.
Okay.
Of other races.
Okay, all right. All right, what we got?
Number one. You know what, Dylan, I'm going to start with number two first.
Oh, we're going to start with number two.
Number two first.
Okay.
Black vampire hiding in the mist. Some
wait,
might...
I thought this is non-black vampire.
Non-black vampire.
All right, okay.
I
King Tut threw you.
We will not be submitting this one for award consideration. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Rip Up Your Balance now. No Deborah Battle, I have not been drinking. Oh. No, actually I was. I drank.
Oh, hey, no free advertising.
I drank some sparkling grapefruit.
Okay.
I think Dylan spiked it.
What happened? Non-black vampire number two that I'll be connecting Derville Martin
in six films,
in
or,
six
less.
Films or less would be.
Thank you for getting us back on track. Hey, if
we look, everyone knows I'm the one that stays on the straight and narrow. So come on, let's go.
Jennifer Aniston.
Jennifer Aniston?
I would consider her. She looks the same as she did on Friends. That was about 15, 20 years ago.
For God's sake. Oh, God.
It's not shown much age.
Oh, my God.
No work that I have seen.
Jennifer Aniston's always a hard one for me because I feel like we've talked about her.
She's white. I know.
Oh, because I don't think she's. I think.
She's done a fair amount of movies.
Yes, none of them are that good.
Okay, but she's done some okay movies.
Oh, for God's sake. All right, let me see. So Jennifer Aniston, let's get to her real quick so we can talk about something besides Jennifer Aniston. Derville Martin is in Five on the Black Hand Side with Dick Anthony Williams. Dick Anthony Williams is in Mo' Better Blues with Samuel Jackson. Samuel Jackson is in Eve's Bayou with Megan Good. Megan Good is in Anchorman 2 with Will Ferrell, who is in Old School with Vince Vaughn, who is in
like about 8 movies already, aren't you?
Am I?
Start over. I
Dick Anthony Williams.
Right. Samuel Jackson.
Samuel Jackson. Megan Good.
Will Ferrell.
Will Ferrell. Oh, so, okay. No, Vince Vaughn.
Okay.
And Vince Vaughn is in that movie, the X's, or the movie with Jennifer Aniston.
The Breakup.
Yeah, The Breakup. Okay. Yeah. All right, very
good. Because I didn't know where you were going from.
No, yeah.
All right, very good, Vincent.
I'm not going to say anything. Go ahead. Who's the next one?
This other, number one, vampire,
non-black,
hiding in the mist.
Hiding in our midst.
Daniel Day-Kim. Probably more popularly known from Lost.
Yeah, but he's been in stuff.
He has been.
Trying to remember, what do I know Daniel Day-Kim from in the movies, though? So Daniel Day-Kim...
most recent movie was this year. He was in Joyride. Asian.
I was about to say, I actually wanted to see Joyride. Daniel Day-Kim. Has he done any voice work?
He's done quite a bit of voice work.
So was Daniel Day-Kim in... is he in one of the Kung Fu Pandas?
I don't think he was in one of the Kung Fu Pandas. No, he was not. I said quite a bit of voice work. I'm actually only really seeing 2 movies that he was in voice. One was a pretty prominent film. I don't know if you've seen it, though, because it's fairly recent. I don't know if, like...
he was, like, in Seeing Red?
No, he was not Seeing Red. Around that time, though. 2021. And I'm not sure if you saw this, Raya and the Last Dragon.
Oh, I didn't. I don't remember what he was in.
He was in the most recent reboot of Hellboy.
Oh, yeah, nobody saw that. It was completely unnecessary. I mean, if I had to, I could get there through Dave Harbour.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that wouldn't be boring for me to get to?
He was in the Divergent series movies.
Oh, I certainly didn't see those.
You didn't see those?
He was in that whole series?
He's in two of them.
I was about to say, because didn't the third one get canceled?
Yeah, I think so.
Good for him, though.
He was also in Spider-Man 2.
Yeah, that's no fun. I'm trying not to use the Marvel sludge.
Okay, fair enough. He was in Cradle to the Grave.
Oh, wait, that's a DMX movie, right?
Yes.
That's a DMX and Aaliyah?
That
isn't Aaliyah
is,
in that?
I don't think so. It's DMX and Jet Li. Yeah, Aaliyah's
right,
in
that's the other Jet. Right.
Okay, this is after she passed.
That's after she passed. Okay. Well, let's work with those. Those are fun. So, let's see if I can do this and not run out. Dervo Martin, I might be too cute and I might run out, but let's see. Dervo Martin.
You are cute.
Oh, thank you. Dervo Martin is,
I told me to tell you that.
Is in Hitman with Bernie Casey.
Mm-hmm.
Bernie Casey is in Cornbread Earl.
And me.
And I'm wrong. No, I'm right. Bernie Casey's in Cornbread Earl and Me, mm-hmm. another 70s film that we haven't talked about that we should sooner than later, with Lawrence Fishburne when he was still going by Larry Fishburne. Yep. Lawrence Fishburne is in, I believe, The Matrix Reloaded with Jet Li.
The Matrix, okay.
And then Jet Li is in Cradle to the Grave with Daniel Day-Kim, apparently. Another film that, like, those weird, like, that, remember that weird moment where DMX was making movies?
I mean, he was the man. DMX had a moment where he was the man in hip hop. I think 50 comes and steals his thunder.
It always seemed like, appropriately enough, Method Man should have been doing more in movies at that moment. Like, I always felt like DMX was doing the movies that Method Man should have been doing.
Yeah, see, but the thing is, Method was very much still a character. And I don't think, I mean, I guess DMX, actually, when you see the documentary on DMX, DMX was, he was DMX. He wasn't really a character. Yeah. But Meth was, I've always felt like Method kind of like hid a lot of his more artistic vibes or inclinations.
Have you watched the Wu-Tang Show on Hulu?
No.
It's okay. Like, I'm not pushing it, but it's okay. It's interesting to see them kind of, because it touches on something. That you, like, Method Man, like, played lacrosse in high school.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like, you know.
But he wouldn't put it on.
Right.
He would stay.
Yeah.
You know, wanted to stay, like, you know, in that character, that Method Man in that
until
world.
Fairly recently, but but yeah. Yeah.
Which is why I think he has taken to acting as well as he has.
I think he's a really good actor.
He's a very good actor.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very good. Actually, a very talented actor.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, there you go.
Well, well done, Vince.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you. And Day Kim's a good one. Yeah.
I try.
Mm-hmm.
Every once in a while.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right.
All right.
It is now time, ladies and gentlemen, to move on into our review of Vampires versus the Bronx in the month of
Boo-tober. I know, my voice cracked. I'm going through puberty. I don't know. I don't know, man. I don't know. I can't call it. I can't call it.
We'll be right back with our movie review after we step to these messages.
Girl Gloria coming at you live. If you see a kid that's riding a bike two sizes too big for him, that's just little man trying to save the neighborhood. And speaking of saving the neighborhood, what's up with all these missing person flyers?
Yo, check out the courthouse.
They're turning it into apartments?
Y'all know how this starts. Them white people with canvas bags, that's always the first sign.
Hey, what you doing down here, bro?
It's too late to fight back now. We are going to wipe you out like the vermin you are.
We got vampires in the Bronx.
Nobody gonna care that Slim disappeared.
Why? Because he's a gangbanger?
Nah, homie. Because he's from the Bronx, like us.
There's a lot of things happening in this neighborhood right now. Keep your eyes open.
All right.
Yo, that was mad vague, dog.
What do you do for work?
Real estate.
Are you seriously out at night when you know there's a couple of vampires running around?
We're gonna need some garlic and some wooden stakes, like, right the hell now.
Going to the nest and take out every last one of them.
One night with you guys and I already have vampires and thugs trying to kill me.
Vampire! Go!
Vampires versus the Bronx. When a trio of friends discover a sinister plot to destroy their neighborhood, they decide to band together to save their borough from vampires. Starring Jaden Michael, Gerald W. Jones III, Gregory Diaz, and actors showing up such as Method Man, and a fan favorite in my house, the young Coco Jones.
Yes.
Directed by Osmani Rodriguez. This was the choice of Lynn Webb. Lynn, how would you like to start our discussion on the epic battle between vampires and the Bronx?
This is a movie that promises, just from the title, that you know what you're going in. You know, this is going to be like a almost like a B movie, just dumb fun, right? It's vampires versus the Bronx. This sounds like incredible. This sounds like a movie that could have been made in 1974, 1975. Put out in by the, you can see like Truck Turner just showing up and just start bashing vampires in the Bronx in this movie, like just from the title, right? So it evokes that type of sentiment in somebody like me or you. But if you're a person of perhaps a younger age, this title springs to mind a slept on film of the early 2000s.
Yeah, that's right.
A British film, Attack the Block.
Attack the Block,
which is all about these aliens that crash land into a London neighborhood, and these gang of teenagers basically get together and fight the aliens, right? And save their neighborhood. So going into this movie, you're thinking, oh, if this is just a 70s B movie, I'm here for it. And if it is a slept on gem, like Attack the Block, a film that gave the world John Boyega.
Yes, it did.
I'm here for that as well. And the second the movie starts with like kind of like a graffiti, you know, title card of Vampire in the Bronx, you're like, okay,
all right,
we're going 70s. I'm with it. You know, load up. I just got my order of gourmet popcorn. So okay. I'm like, I'm ready to go.
Ready to go.
And then the movie starts and young Jaden Michael appears on the screen, riding his bicycle through the town. He's trying to save the town because you find out that they're going to be closing like this bodega, as there is this real estate company that is moving in to the Bronx, and they are slowly not only gentrifying the entire Bronx, but one by one, people who are selling their homes or selling their businesses, they are gone. Like, they are either leaving in the middle of the night, or people have just lost complete track of them. And like any independent film, it wears a lot of its trappings right on its sleeve. So the real estate company is like Morneau Properties or something like that, which is basically a name that is taken from historic vampire and Dracula lore. Yeah. The logo is actually the image of Vlad the Impaler.
Yes.
Basically the real life inspiration for Dracula. And the whole idea of these vampires coming into the Bronx and gentrifying the Bronx is interesting, because they're seen as like these white Europeans. Moving in, young, slick, you know, with their white bags and their long coats. So that commentary is there and it's ripe for discussion. But again, Jaden Michael on the bicycle, riding through the Bronx, trying to save his neighborhood, running into his friends, played by Gerard Jones as Bobby and Gregory Diaz as Louise. And the three of them basically are our window into the Bronx that is created here.
Yeah.
They, unfortunately, do not have any charisma nor chemistry with one another, so that you are not engaged via this window into the world. The trappings of the world seem kind of cool. There's scenes where there's young Afro-Latinas sitting Latin people sitting out on the corner, like cracking jokes. That's kind of cool. There's a girl that goes around doing like a vlog throughout the Bronx. She's got some energy as she's popping in and showing like all of the gentrification going on. It's like, what's going on here? What's going on here? That's kind of fly. You got these, one of the great running jokes is like these two girls who are totally oblivious to everything that is going on. And they just walk across this, looking in their screens, just like, oh my God, can you believe that she did that? And that's all that happens. They just walk across the screen. It is so funny. It's one of the funniest recurring jokes in the movie. Some of the adults have cool moments. Mero from DeJesus and Mero. He shows up running the bodega. He's funny. He's cool. He is a lot of grounding to this to the movie. Zoe Saldana, blink and you miss her.
Does him a solid.
Like,
She did him a solid.
The beginning of the movie, and really gets the movie starting off on a bang. It basically is the Drew Barrymore scene from from Scream. Zoe Saldana does that in the top of the movie. So she gets the movie starting off right. And then you also see a favorite of mine, and a favorite if you watch any show on HBO, Shea Whigham.
Yes.
Showing up in this movie. So now you're like, oh, okay. Solid actor.
Yeah.
In this movie. I'm here for it. But your window into this world and the person that you follow throughout this entire world are the three young boys. And I don't think either three of them at this stage in their career in 2020 are strong enough actors to get over what is pretty much basic script. There's nothing, the script is not changing the game in any way. But I don't think they really get the lines over. And nor, as I mentioned, I don't think they have any chemistry with one another at all. And because they had, the only time there's any type of chemistry starts to formulate between this group is when your girl, Coco Jones, shows up. And even though she's kind of like interspersed throughout the whole movie, but it's not until like the second, the last third of the movie that she becomes one of the crew. And then it starts to pop with a little bit of energy, but then they quickly run her off.
Well, I mean,
and she doesn't return to the end. Well, yeah. You kind of have to, because one, she hasn't been there through the whole movie. And two, when she does come in, she actually runs the risk of stealing the movie from him. And I would have loved her to be in there from the jump, because her character, I think, has a very interesting vibe. It's not super touched on, but she comes from a Haitian descent.
My favorite line in the whole movie.
So she already has like experience.
She says, "I'm Haitian. My grandmother been getting me ready for this my whole life."
So she's ready. She's ready for this game. So, and that comes early. So you're like, "Oh, give me more, give me more." But they run her off in the movie. And it really is a shame, because you sense from the direction, from the writer director Ayaz Martinez, that, you know, he's not, like I said, he's not trying to change the game with this script, but he is trying to have a little bit of fun, right?
Absolutely.
And I'm not going to knock him. It's just like I think he's like very early in his directing career. So I think it's competently directed, but he puts everything on the shoulders of these three kids, and I just think that they let him down. I do think that the pacing could have been a little bit quicker as far as the editing on the movie, to help kind of like sell some of the action and maybe sell some of the rhythm of the dialogue and the jokes that are in there, because it's, while it is a horror movie, it is also a bit of a comedy, and you know, you know, and these are kids. There's no gore in here at all. I don't even think there's really any blood. The only blood that shows up is on somebody's teeth.
Yeah.
And even then, it's barely there.
Yeah.
So, and that's fine. I'm not knocking it for it. You know, it plays it safe. But I just think that these three kids are the letdown of the movie. And ultimately, I found myself, I'm not going to damn it because it's not Attack the Block.
Right.
But it had an opportunity to be something. And I just think it doesn't get there.
Yeah. I disagree. I like the kids. Like, I like the kids. I thought they did fine. I thought they did fine. I think they're young. And to your point, I completely agreed with your assessment that once Coco Jones comes in, which, in their defense, both, I think, literally and within the movie, she's like 2 or 3 years older than them.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, as soon as Coco Jones is on the screen, everything shifts her way. But I thought they were fine. I liked them. And in full disclosure, it may be because this film charmed the hell out of me.
Really?
I really, really enjoyed this film, and I thought the film did a wonderful job creating this sense of place. Like, this felt like a neighborhood that you understood why they were fighting for it. I think tonally it reminded me of the films that I miss and love so much from the 80s. And we talked about a few of them last week, you know, whether it's Fright Night or The Goonies, where there was this wonderful kind of tonal sweet spot that you got in the 80s, where there were stakes. because people die in this movie. And yeah. you know, as again, back to Zoe Saldana, which shout out for Zoe Saldana, who apparently waited through. I always assume Zoe Saldana's mansion just has money. All like she just has to wade through all the money for her showing up and doing this film a solid. Mm-hmm. And as you said, a very effective first scene. People die in this movie. There are stakes, but it never really loses sight of the kind of humor. And there is a light touch mm-hmm. to it. Speaking of it as a neighborhood, you mentioned Coco Jones and this wonderful line where, you know, of course, it's a vampire movie. And there's always a part of a vampire movie where the one group of people who have seen the vampires have to convince everyone else.
Yeah.
And when they go to her, as you said, she believes immediately. And they're like, why are you so? And she's like, you know, I'm Haitian. So my grandmother been getting me ready for this.
Right.
I love going back to the sense of place. This sense that these are ordinary people.
Mm-hmm.
Like there was a shift, like there was a twist that I was waiting to come that never came. Method Man, speaking of Method Man, plays a priest. And you know us, we're always trying to figure out the twist. We're always trying to figure out what's going to happen. And let's be real. If you've seen Method Man on like social media or anyway in the past 8 years, he's always doing some push-ups. Or lifting weights or something. So like you're waiting for the moment where Method Man is going to rip off his shirt
and be like the hero
and be the hero. And like, I've been looking for these vampires the whole time. And it's like, no, he's actually just a priest.
Yeah. He's just a priest.
He's actually just a guy that owns a bodega. These are actually just their mothers and grandmothers. And they actually get pissed at the vampires when they commit the cardinal sin of insulting the Bronx.
Yes.
So I love that part and of
one,
it.
One girl throws a Timberland.
One girl throws a Timberland at her, which is the most stereotypical, but is it really that stereotypical New York thing of all time? I loved the sort of internal logic of the vampire stuff. Like one of my nerd hobbies. Mm-hmm. is thinking about the logistics of being a vampire.
Okay.
Like, what would that act? And we've talked about this several times where I just do not understand why no one thinks about the fact that if you were a vampire, you would prey on poor people and brown people and black people because nobody cares.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point they say that, you know, if we disappeared, nobody would care because we're here in the Bronx. So they touch on that, but then the whole plot of them regentrifying the Bronx. I'm thinking, well, that doesn't make sense because if you regentrify it, you're going to bring other people here.
Yeah.
But then they have this brilliant detail where they talk about, and you know, I'm going to, you know, it's a little spoiler, but it's clever enough. I'm trying to make people convince them to watch it, where vampires can't come into a place unless they're invited. And this is actually a plot detail. But part of the reason they're buying up all the property is because then the property will belong to them.
And they don't have to be
invited. And they don't have to be invited in. And I said, that is genuinely clever.
That was clever.
I just forgot our boy's name. Which one? The actor that we like, who plays the familiar.
Shea Whigham.
There's this wonderful exchange between one of the boys and Shea Whigham, who's a familiar. And of course, like, you know, you always see these familiar. And I never understood the familiar thing. Like, I never understood this, oh, I'm working for the vampire because he's going to turn me.
Mm-hmm.
Because it never, ever happens. No. And if you pay attention, they never say he's going to turn me like he turned Jonathan. Like, it's never a vampire around that used to be a familiar. Like, I was a familiar until 1983, and then I got turned. It's always a vampire who's like 800 years old, and then this dumbass familiar. And I'm like, dude, read the room. Or if you get turned, and this was maybe my second favorite line, Do you think the hierarchy is going to change?
Right.
Dude, so you're just going to be their bitch forever.
That's what Bobby, the young boy,
right,
says.
Right, Bobby, the young boy says. And I'm like, Bobby is making really good points about vampire logistics.
Yeah, see, now, he does make good points, but Bobby is one of the younger boys.
Yes.
And what I didn't like about that scene, I liked the point that he was making.
Yes.
But one, I think the point, him making that scene, I think is we're meant to take it as an allusion to what's going on internally with him in regards to his brother.
Right.
His history of his brother who lost his life.
Right.
To the streets. Mm-hmm. We're not shown how or why.
Right, because it is a light touch.
Right.
Yeah.
But I don't know if the connection really lands. So some people may not make that connection.
Mm-hmm.
And also, that scene doesn't play fair with the level of intelligence that Bobby has shown throughout the movie.
Oh, I don't think that's
and
true.
And returns to later on.
I think Bobby, first of all, I think he's actually like a kid. Like, I think he's actually like a kid. And kids, I mean, that's how kids are. Kids are smart and they're dumb within the same 3 minutes.
I guess. I think that seemed a little bit more perceptive than he had let on.
I think Bobby was doing the best he can, but the best he can is what a 12-year-old does. Or 13. I couldn't quite nail down. I was thinking they were 12, 13 years old.
I was thinking about 13.
Yeah, 13 years old.
They're running
old.
Around by themselves.
Right. But I'm also not really passionate enough about those characters to fight for them. Like I really do think, you know, when you were saying, you were talking about it's not fair to compare it to Attack the Block, which I agree with, because, you know, John Boyega is just lightning in a bottle.
Yeah.
And you think about, you know, even the kids on Stranger Things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I love the Stranger Things kids, but like, I always kind of go, because they're all very polished and very professional.
Mm-hmm.
But I think about the kid in Fright Night, who I don't even remember his name. I remember about the Coreys,
yeah,
in Lost Boys,
mm-hmm,
where, you know, the Coreys were never that good.
No.
They're kids. I think about all the Goonies. You know, all the Goonies.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I think part of the reason we all loved River Phoenix so much in Stand By Me is because, like, River Phoenix he's like Tupac in Poetic Justice, sitting next to these other three kids.
Well,
you know, they're kids.
Well, I think you're talking about Tupac in
not Poetic Justice. Yeah, no, in Poetic Justice with Janet Jackson.
Oh, well, yeah, I'm thinking more in Juice because he's next to,
right.
Well, I guess, Omar Epps is.
Yeah, so, you know, like, I don't think you're wrong about the kids not being that good of, you know, that.
I mean, see, but you, acting, like, you talk about.
But I also don't think have to be.
Yeah, but you talk about, like, don't want to compare it to Attack the Block. But in Attack the Block, yes, John Boyega sells the movie. He, mm-hmm, he kills it. But he's a kid in the movie.
I mean, not that young.
He's, okay, but he's
17, 18 years old.
Okay, but he's still not a. All right, fair enough.
All right,
but he is surrounded by kids in that movie, mm-hmm, as well. Some of them close to his age, but some younger.
Right.
They all fit. They all work together. There's a rhythm that they all have. They feel like they are friends. These three feel like they were cast, and they don't feel they each are basically a stereotype. You know, the Jaden Michaels is like the little mayor,
right?
Kind of like, you know, pro everything. You know, you got your nerdy boy in Louise,
sure,
and then you've got Bobby, who's like, you know, being, you know,
right, one foot in the streets,
don't know where he wants to go. It's very rote by the numbers.
True.
And I just don't think that, yeah, it's just, they let me down. I just didn't enjoy them.
I think you've been spoiled the past 10 years with kid actors.
I mean, I'm not spoiled. I don't mind, because I'll give an actor a pass.
Yeah, like, I think, you know.
And you're right, they're not bad.
Right,
but I just don't think I think in a film that doesn't have a whole lot of other stuff to kind of like maybe, like if the adults are given more to do
mm-hmm.
and are more in part of the film, then maybe they can, you know, I'm liking the film because at least while I'm getting a lot of them.
Right.
Method Man, you talk about, he's a priest. He really ain't in the movie that much.
You get this,
and not giving much to do.
You get the sense Method Man was doing a massage.
He was probably doing a sound. Zoe Saldana is doing a sound. Yeah. Shea Whigham, he's in and out, but he's... To be fair, and I love him, he's mailing this one in.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so and the adults aren't giving much to
do. Right. I've never been a huge fan of Chris Redd, but I liked him.
Good in this.
Yeah.
But he's allowed to stay in his lane. But even then,
right.
You want a little bit more from him.
What's going on? I feel like it was enough going on, like I could pick from it all of it. I liked it. I liked it.
I actually am surprised that you liked it.
I did. They charmed these kids. They did. They charmed the hell out of me. I actually really liked the story. Like, they did. They did. And I am a sucker for these. The whole community rises up. And everyone getting angry when they mention the Bronx cracked me up.
That was, yeah. I mean, it has moments.
Right.
It does have moments, but it's just, you know, ultimately.
Yeah, I actually think this would be a good double feature with Attack the Block. I think you got to start with this.
Yeah, you got to get this out of the way.
You got to start with this. Like, you can't watch this after Attack the Block.
Yeah, play this at 4:00.
But I did. I like these kids. And again, as someone who's a fan. Like, I'm actually a fan of Stranger Things. Like, I've enjoyed watching these kids grow up.
Mm-hmm.
But even from the first season, as someone who was old enough to remember the 80s movies when they, like, we just named the big ones. But, you know, I don't know, like Monster Squad or, like, you know, there was always something charming about the kid actors. Were just like you know, they were kids. Just like they were actually kids, so that when you saw someone again like River Phoenix,
mm-hmm.
it was like a revelation. It was like, oh shit, this boy is actually acting a little bit, as opposed to the other kids that, you know, as soon as the camera moved around, they were kind of messing around with each other,
like the Corys.
Yeah. This seems off topic, but it's also very relevant. Did you watch the Ninja Turtles movie?
The most recent
one? The most recent one.
I started it.
You didn't like it?
I would just... No, here's the thing. Here's the thing about Ninja Turtles. I like the concept of the Ninja Turtles. God bless them. God bless their success.
Mm-hmm.
The most recent one, which is animated. Yeah. Animated in a very cool fashion.
Yeah, yeah, very stylized.
Very stylized. Enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
Enjoy the style.
Mm-hmm.
But as I was turned it on and was sitting down, and I had set aside time to sit and watch it.
Mm-hmm.
As they were going through their shtick, I realized that I don't care about them. I just don't care about the Ninja Turtles. They just don't do it for me. God bless them. I'm not saying anything bad about them. They just don't do it for me.
See, I'm probably the opposite. I've always hated the Ninja Turtles.
Like, always hated them.
Always hated the.
Well, I've never liked the movie.
I never liked the movies. I never liked the concept. You know, just be old curmudgeon comic fan. I didn't like the way they, you know, it was the parody.
Yeah, it was a parody.
Of the Frank Miller stuff in the comics. Never liked any of it. This apparently is the first time they had actual kids
doing the voices.
Those kids charmed the hell out of me. I loved those kids in the Ninja Turtles movie so much. And it reminded me of like they're like actual kids. So I liked it. And much like this, none of the voice actors, like none of the voice actors in the Ninja Turtles can be in the Miles Morales movies. Like, this is all real charming, but when it's time to make Beyond, what's the final one going to be?
Beyond the Spider-Verse.
Beyond the Spider-Verse? Yeah, y'all going to have to sit that out. Like, y'all can't be in this. But for this, I liked it. And I kind of felt the same way about this. So, okay. I liked it. I liked it a lot.
Okay.
All right. So, I guess the question, of course, though.
What?
Is would you recommend it? Okay.
I don't think you're missing anything by missing Vampire on the Bronx.
Okay.
Versus the Bronx.
Okay. I would recommend it. I think it's a really cool entry into that 11, 12-year-old market. Because like you said, it's not gory. There are stakes,
mm-hmm.
which pardon the pun. You know, I think there should be stakes in these. Because again, the 80s movies, there were stakes. Mm-hmm. Like people died and it was stuff. I love the fact that there was no sort of outside superpower,
yeah,
mythology, because you kind of set it up for it, and there wasn't. So, you know, I love this sort of community thing. I enjoyed it. So I guess we have a split decision.
So you would recommend?
I would.
Vampire.
I would.
Versus the Bronx.
Yeah, and there were moments, like every 4 or 5 minutes, somebody would say something that would make me laugh. Like, I don't think the script is August Wilson or anything, but I have to say, every 4 or 5 minutes, somebody would say something that would make me laugh. All right. So,
ladies and gentlemen, you can choose to enjoy 25 minutes of Vampire versus the Bronx, or like me, you can watch Attack the Block again. But before we tell you what we're going to be reviewing next week in Bootober, I invite you to follow the Me Show Mission on all your social media, at Me Show Mission on Instagram, at Me Show Mission on Facebook, at Me Show Mission on Twitter, at Me Show Mission on YouTube, where you can subscribe and hit the bell to be notified of when we put up our new videos, our new shorts, or when we are going live with our show, which streams every Tuesday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, from Yunk Junk, Philadelphia's premier video palace for podcasts. Come in, talk to Terry, talk to all of the guys here. Dylan, we keep him hermetically sealed, but you can talk to everybody else.
Not
about
the coffin.
Getting your time. No, Dylan doesn't do coffins. Never thought I'd say that line. Dylan, yeah, come here. Go to videocontentfactory.com and book your time in one of the fantastic studios here at Yunk Junk. All right? The Michelle Mission is also a proud member of The Podglomerate, thepodglomerate.com. They make podcasts work, such as ours, who you can contact by sending us an email at michellemission@gmail.com. That's michellemission@gmail.com. Next week, here on the Michelle Mission, Vincent talks smack, but he could have felt free to choose a movie from the 1970s.
It's true.
To screen for you, to review for you.
I could have.
For Bootober.
It's good. We could have talked about Blackenstein for an hour and a half.
We could have. But no.
No.
He didn't not.
I did not.
He chose other.
I did.
He chose to go to the aughts.
I did.
He chose to go to a man in drag.
Yes, I did.
He chose.
It's all right to cross dress for Christ.
For you. Boo.
Yes.
A Madea mystery.
A Madea. Is it called?
A Madea Halloween.
A Madea Halloween movie.
Madea Halloween.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Madea Halloween.
Yeah.
Boo.
Boo.
Next week.
Yes.
Hero, why did you choose Boo?
I am fascinated by Boo. Have you seen it?
No.
I haven't seen it either. But you know, as part of our ongoing Tyler Perry conversation and Madea and Madea. And it's always this weird spoonful of sugar formula that he has where, you know, you come from Madea in the hijinks, but then it's this like heavy handed morality that you get once Madea gets you in. But Madea, this like Boo looks like it's just 100% farce. I don't know. I haven't seen it. So maybe there is, you know, a family going through troubles and crack and like a dude.
No, I'm sure there is.
The dude with a college degree who don't believe in church slapping on some woman.
I'm sure there's that too. Know.
But what if there isn't? Like, what if it's just Madea and it's Halloween stuff? What does that say? What if the center does not hold? Like, if there's no moralizing center, does Madea drift apart? Also, I love the fact that Chris Rock talks some slick shit about Tyler Perry in Top 5 about Madea, Madea Halloween, and then Tyler Perry went and made a movie that I believe might be the highest grossing Madea film. So, I love that part of it too. We'll talk about all of this next week.
Here on the Michelle Mission, ladies and gentlemen. Until then, he's Vincent, I'm Len. And in parting, we say,
we'll see you when it's time to meet again.
In Boo-Tober.
The Michelle Mission is produced by Len Webb and Vincent Williams and edited by Len Webb with co-production by Mo Poplar. Music by Alexa Gold. And filmed at the Video Content Factory. The Michelle Mission is a proud member of the Podglomerate Podcast Network.